morning. Trying to see who has the mic. Looks like Mr. Finley has the mic, and I'm going to have him say a prayer for us as we get started. Oh, thought he had the mic. He didn't. This is just his cell phone. Matt, you mind saying a prayer for us as we get started?
Sure. Let's pray. Our God and Lord in heaven, we come to you at the beginning of this time of study. We ask you, please be with us. Help us to learn more about what you would have us do and how you would have us do it. We ask that you please be with us as we go out into the world this week and be zealous and show our light for you. Lord, we ask that you always help to guide us and make the right decisions that we should. Help us be like Jesus. We ask all of these things in his name. Amen.
So, last class. Wednesday night we'll have our end of quarter fun time class, I guess. It's actually really great. Kids really enjoy that. I'm glad we get to do that. So, looking forward to that. So, before I go any much farther, LR and I have really enjoyed this process. It's been a great experience for us. Hopefully, you all have enjoyed it just as much. But there is, I'm going to give you a couple, like, challenges throughout the class just to sort of rein it back in. And my first one is if you have a phone that is capable of setting reminders, set a reminder for 1 year from today to get this book back out, okay, and look at it again. I know it sounds weird, and you'll just always have that one little reminder staring you in the face when you look, but about a year from now, just set a reminder to come back and look at this, because I think it's one of those books that I haven't read it twice yet, but if we come back to it again in about a year, I think we'll see some things we either didn't see, or we'll be able to see a lot of growth in ourselves if we're really putting into practice sort of what we got out of that. As you can see up there, lesson 21 and 22, I started looking at 21, and I was like, maybe I'll do this one, and I thought, it's sort of short, actually, so I probably won't just do this one. And then I looked at 22, and I was like, oh, I definitely want to talk about this one, but it's also sort of short. So I thought, you know what, let's just mix them together, and we're going to go pretty quick through both of them, because there's a few other things I want to talk about as well. So, but there we go. So let's go to 21 first. 21. In 22, we are both still in our tend zone, right? We're still right there where we are stoking the fire when it needs to. We are pushing a log over. Or if it's flared up just a little too much, we're going to maybe move around just a little bit so it calms itself a little bit. Because fire's great, right, until it's not. And when it's not, it's really not great. And so we got to watch that a little bit sometimes, too. So there we go. So our first question is, where's your list? Little handout I gave you. I threw away last week's handouts, but I left the one with the list. So if you weren't here on Wednesday night, we looked at a list of 10 great habits that an author said that he believes Christians develop. I left those handouts in the back, and I can always make more if you need. And it's sort of just a fill in the blank. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to pray about this. I'm going to study these people. I'm going to read these books. And so where is yours if you don't have it or you lost it? It's unfortunate, but we always have a copy machine, so that's good. So you can always grab one, tape it up somewhere once you fill it out, update it as you go. If you ever need a new one, I will totally make more for you guys, okay? It's just a copy button push away. So anybody questions, comments? Anybody look through that and have just a revelation that they'd like to share with everybody about the list? Anything they really liked? Matt's running mic, so if you're close, I'll get you with mine. He'll get you from the back. So. Okay. So let's talk about our goal for the day. Our goal is to remind ourselves where our hope lies, okay? And that actually sort of works for both lessons, not so much the hero one, but it works for all of us. This is the reminder lesson that we all pretty much need of, it's the why, right? I always think back, there's an old Mountain Dew commercial where these three guys are playing basketball. And they do a break, and the guy calls cut, and they go from being like these guys playing basketball to these like Shakespearean actors, and the one guy goes, "What's my motivation?" Right? And so it's like, that's sort of the thing that I always come back to. What is our motivation? And our motivation is going to be where our hope lies, okay? And we're going to get to that quite a bit. So, and sorry, I completely forgot to get handouts yesterday and get them made, so no handouts today. So first one, we're going to talk about heroes real quick, okay? And heroes, lately, I grew up reading comic books and reading science fiction and fantasy novels. And, oh, I just got something before we go. No, you're good. Yeah, it's okay.
When I looked at this chapter, I was thinking about the chapter we had on mentoring and how this fits right into that, our heroes and mentors. And we're gaining mentors for ourselves by heroes. But you mentioned comic books. When I was a boy, my grandmother had comic books that looked like the Superman, Batman comic books, except they were on Bible figures. There was one I remember on Paul the Apostle and Acts where they're sailing there to Rome and they go through the storm. It was a whole comic book about that. And I thought, man, that would be great for kids if we still had those today. But these were real people. These are heroes. These are that we can look up to.
Yeah, that's a good point. So as we look at heroes, like when they first put out like the first Iron Man movie, and then I was like, oh, that's cool. And then like, oh, we're gonna make a whole bunch of these. It was like the best thing in the world for me, right? Because I love that stuff. And the heroes are the people we look up to, the things that we see, that we want to be like. And really, this one is no different, right? When you look up to a hero, it gives you something to aspire to. It gives you something to think about. It gives you something to work towards, okay? So we're just going to do a real quick reminder of heroes and how heroes are good for us as Christians. And then we're going to go from there on to the next lesson. So we're going to go pretty quick. So what do heroes do? First thing heroes do is they inspire, okay? So is he talking about just Bible heroes, or is he also talking about having, heroes that you look up, people that you look up to in modern day? What's he talking about in the book? Anybody get a chance to look through that part? I think he's talking about both. We should have people that we look at the Bible and we say, this is my Bible hero. Because remember, we also had the lesson about aligning your personality and your traits and your attributes with the skills that you have. And there's the different types of personalities. And you can see that throughout the Bible. I think he's talking about both. And it is good to have people that you look up to as well in person, because that is while we do have a connection with the people in the Bible, as human beings, we have a much bigger connection with the people that we can like face-to-face talk to, right? And they can also have a strong impact on our lives. Okay, so heroes inspire. Heroes make us want to be better, right? And I think that's an important thing we need to remember, because he is right, and LR made a really good point. This isn't just to tell us to look for heroes. It's also to us to realize that we could be heroes to somebody else, okay? And remember that we have this, and you may or may not know that you're somebody's hero until about 15 to 20 years later when they tell you that, okay? So let's keep moving from there. Heroes keep us humble. How do heroes keep us humble? How does having somebody that we look up to, or knowing that we are somebody that they look up to, keep us humble? They set the example, yeah, and especially if it's somebody who is your hero is someone who is very humble, who is very, very much level. But I think there's another level of that too, is that when we look up to a hero, it's because usually they're really, really good at something. It's also a reminder that there are some things we're not great at, because are our heroes almost always perfect? No, they have flaws too, and so that's also a reminder that, hey, these guys have flaws. We could too, okay? And he brings up the Corinthians, where Paul reminds them, we have this treasure in earthen vessels so that that the surpassing greatness of the power will be of our God and not from ourselves. It reminds us that while we do have those skills and we have those abilities, where do they come from? What's that? Yeah, they come from God, right? And they are not necessarily always ours. There may be things that we've worked really hard towards, but ultimately, they're God-given talents. Okay? Heroes renew optimism. Okay? How many of you all, and this is audience participation, how many of you all have realized in the last year that you need to have more optimism? Yeah, thank you. You got a couple of people raising their hand. The rest of y'all are lying in church. That's bad. We haven't got enough room up here for y'all to come up front, but we'll just assume that that's what you wanted to do. So, yeah, they renew our optimism. And if anything, over the last few years, we have definitely lost some of our optimism. And I think it is good to look at our heroes and realize that it is good to be optimistic. And in this one, he also reminds us that when we look at our heroes, and as a teacher thing, we always teach the hero's journey. How many of y'all remember that unit from school where you learn about, oh, the hero, like he's down here and then he's doing better and then he has a little bit of a setback and then he goes up. If you really need a reminder, Kim would love to teach you a lesson about the hero's journey. I'm sure she has a great one. But it reminds us that heroes are not always a linear path, right? That our lives may not be a linear path, and we've talked about that a lot, that there are times that we are going to stumble and we are going to mess up and it's going to not always be great, but ultimately, what do our heroes do that moves them on? What happens when Iron Man loses his suit and he does what? He builds a new one out of a kid's garage, out of Radio Shack parts, right? What happens when, with the thorn in the flesh? Is it just over? He just gives up? No. He builds another one. He goes out and he keeps working and he prays about it and he says, you know what? If I have it, and he keeps doing better, right? So that's just the reminder that we're going to mess up. So did our heroes. Nobody in this room has ever had a life path that looks like this, right? Except maybe Harper because she's a little baby. But the rest of us have had ups and downs, and we're going to, and our heroes remind us of that. They remind us to leave the past behind. So that's sort of like the one before. The perfect example is Paul, right? The man literally helped murder Christians, held the coats of the people who stoned who? Stephen. He was there. He wasn't just a participant. He was management at that, right? So what does that tell us about heroes remind us to leave the past behind? Once again, we have all had hard times, right? We have all had bad stuff happen. We have all made some really stupid choices in our life. And once again, if I ask you to raise your hand and say if you've ever made a stupid choice and you leave your hand down, I love you, but I'll call you a liar. It's part of our culture here. We should be able to help each other out. We've all made really dumb choices, and it's really easy to get bogged down by that, right? We talked about that Wednesday night, that we could very easily drown in every bad choice we've ever made, but we have to remind ourselves that what? It's in the past, right? You always quote great philosophers, and there was one who might or might not have been a warthog. And he said, you've got to put your past behind you, right? And then they sang a song about it. Lion King, Pumbaa, you know, Hakuna Matata, forget everything, it's there. So, as we move forward and as we go on, should we never look back at our past as a learning example, learning process? No, I think it's valuable, and I think last week's lesson brought that up. We should reflect, right? Because sometimes when you catch yourself in those destructive thought patterns, if you think back for about a half a minute, you're like, okay, this is familiar. This pattern set me on this trail, and this is what happened. It's enough to sort of shock you out of it, right? To be like, yep, not doing that again. And so that's a process we got to think about, and our heroes remind us to do that, right? So I know that was really quick on lesson 21, but any questions on that one, comments? Yeah, Dale.
When you ask about heroes, my first thought was Joseph. Joseph and Daniel, because we don't see any of them doing anything wrong. But then I got to thinking, really, my hero, I guess, is Peter, because he messed up so many times. But end up, he's the only one of the apostles, only the one we know of, that walked on water. But he sure made a lot of mistakes. But he ended up becoming an elder of the church, ended up writing an epistle. He's a great hero.
Yeah, that's important. And if you are sitting here and you're like, I don't know who my Bible hero is, it's okay. Some people may or may not know. Go back to the lesson on your personality and take the little quiz thing, like just Google that quiz and take it and then look at one of the heroes that they say lines up with you. And I bet you if you start to read about that person a little bit and you just dedicate a couple days to thinking about that hero and reading about their story or that person, you will find a hero. You will find somebody that you identify with. And you could say, hey, I really dig this person. I think their journey is there. But I do want to put a plug in for finding heroes in real life. If you don't have a hero that you look up to in real life, find somebody, okay? And find somebody that you can sort of latch on to. And you don't even have to go to them and say, you're my hero. But listen to them, talk to them, take in their experience and learn about it because it is valuable. And if you don't think that you're somebody's hero, start paying attention to how some of these younger people act towards you and some of the little people act towards you, and you'll start to realize real quick that you are somebody's hero already, okay? They may or may not be looking at you for much, but they are looking at you for something. So keep that in mind. And it's something we sort of discount the little kids, and we discount the middle grades kids and the high school kids, but if you look and you watch their behaviors and their actions, you can find out real quick who these kids look up to, okay? And if you're one of them, that is a very, very serious job because they are forming what they believe about life from their parents and their heroes, right? And you can have a lot of impact, good or bad. Bad, I'd hope, would be harder to reach in our interactions, but the good is definitely something you can do. So pay attention to that. It's sort of a job requirement for me. I have to watch how kids treat me and how they react, and Hannah could tell you. She could probably tell you there are certain kids that are just love her them some librarian, and you don't really think about it. You're like, oh, man, this kid, they're sort of idolizing me, and I didn't even realize it, and you sort of feel like a jerk sometimes, and you'd be like, just go away, you're bugging me. I do it all the time. Okay, so we're going to move to fixing your hope above, okay? This is a really great lesson. If you didn't get to read it, make sure you get to read it after we talk about it. There's a lot here, but there's not a lot to read, right? There's a lot of reflection that we could do here. And if I had another class, I'd definitely do a full reflection class and just look at what are the top five things we can take away from this book, okay? And actually, that's something I will challenge you to do. Look, this last page right here, it's completely blank. Go in and just, what are the five things that you learned, okay? So that way when you come back to it in a year, which you're all going to set that reminder, I know you are, you can look at this book, and even if you don't have a chance to read the whole book, you can look here, and it's your Cliff Notes version, right? So I definitely challenge you to do that. So far, set a reminder for next year, a year from today, and top five. What are the top five things that you pulled out of that book? So fixing your hope above. Hope and zeal. He uses a good example that these are two very great qualities, to have a quality of hope and a quality of zeal. But if they're pulling in the opposite direction, what happens? If you've ever, I love American history and I love watching videos of people who are like farming that way, like the way the colonials did. And there's a video once where they have these oxen, and they've got them yoked together, but one of them decides he's going this way, and one of them decides he's going this way, and they just completely shatter the chain between the two of them and then tear the big plow chain that's behind them, just tear it in half, right? So what happens if this bull is hope and this bull is zeal, and your zeal is to please God, but your hope is otherwise, what happens? It's dysfunctional, right? It tears your plow apart. You're not going to get any work done because you have conflicting, very strong conflicting emotions. And so this lesson is about how do we line those up? How do we yoke them together so we make sure that our bulls aren't going to tear the tools apart, right? So hope and zeal are very similar, right? What do we say zeal? The other emotion that is really close to zeal is... starts with an E. Envy, yeah. Envy is a very strong one. But hope, I believe, is even stronger, right? So how do we mix these together, and how do we throw our hope and our zeal together? So 1 Peter 1:13 is pretty much the verse we're going to use the entire class, okay? And I usually use, when I put verses up on the board, I usually use NIV. I had to go to NASB for this one because it didn't quite line up with what he's talking about in the book. So if you notice a difference in translations, that's why. So he says, therefore, prepare your minds for action. Keep sober in spirit. Set your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. There's a lot there, right? One verse, but a whole bunch. I think this is one of those, like I mentioned Cliff Notes a second ago, this is one of those Cliff Notes verses that if you had to give somebody advice, I think this is one of the great ones. Hey, here you go. What should I do? I'm having this trouble. Read this, okay? And it covers a whole bunch of stuff, right? So the therefore, what's the therefore? It's like the number one preacher dad joke. If there's a therefore, you gotta look and see what it's there for, right? How many of y'all have heard that? I'm sure. I know I've heard it from this pulpit about 1,000 times. So what's the therefore? What's Peter doing in 1 Peter? What's the goal of the book? He's talking to the Jews who have been scattered, yeah. So in 12, he says, it was revealed to them that they were not serving themselves, but you and these things which now have been announced to you through those who preach the gospel to you by the Holy Spirit sent from heaven, things into which angels long to look. What's Peter, what's he telling them? You know stuff that angels want to know. You have this knowledge, right? He's reminding them that you have this knowledge that even angels want. And here's what you do with it, right? So therefore, you have this, therefore do this. And this is what he's telling them to do, right? So let's talk about those. There's three things he tells us to do there. He tells us to prepare the minds, keep sober in spirit, and set your hope completely on the grace to be brought, okay? So we're going to talk about those three things. Probably have time. But if I don't, I'll talk faster than normal. So what does it mean to prepare your mind? Everybody's heard the, what is this literally translated as? It's literally translated as gird up your mind, okay? And we know what gird means, right? What's gird? Nobody? To bind up, right? Or there's another translation that says belt up your mind, right? So like belt up your mind. It's really funny, in the hallways at school, when kids, like, the bell rings and they're late, they'll start to, like, sort of run to class, and you can tell the ones that don't have a belt because they're running like this because they can't do anything, right? And so to gird up literally means to belt up, right? So back in these times, they would have been wearing long, flowy robes. I've got a student from Saudi Arabia, and she said, yeah, when we go home, my dad wears that all the time. And I was like, why is that? I just was wondering because it's, like, have you seen, it's the white, like sort of frock thing all the way along. He said, it lets air circulate. You don't want to be wearing pants in 120 degrees weather in the shade, right? But if you ever want to fight or you ever want to run, she said it's really funny because he has to like sort of waddle when he's trying to run faster because it doesn't let his legs move very fast. But you would literally, and I'm sure you've seen this, you reach in between your legs and you grab the back of your tunic or toga or whatever, and you pull it up and you tuck it into the front of your belt, right? And it makes them look like palazzo pants, like the big floofy pants and stuff. And it keeps your fabric from binding yourself, okay? It keeps you from doing this. The Scots wore kilts. They did the same thing. When they would go into combat or they were looking to make sure their kilts weren't flowing all over the place, they would grab the back and tuck it in. They had the little pin right here. If you ever look, they always have the little bag that has a pin. That's what the pin's for. They tuck it in, put the pin through it, and they have these little fancy pants, right? Look like MC Hammer pants from back in the day, if you're old enough to remember what those look like. So, but to gird up, to really prepare your mind, right? To be ready. And that's what this is really talking about here. In this first one, I'll skip this one. There we go. I was supposed to be with that one. So to prepare your minds, gird up your mind, be prepared. I'm not ready to go there yet, right? So it's to be ready, to gird up your mind, to prepare yourself for action. So how do we prepare our mind for action? Study. If you're not studying, you should be. And if you're not studying and you want to know how, the state of Kentucky trusts me to teach little kids how to study. I'm pretty sure I could teach you to study a little bit. I don't mind to do that. Won't take nearly as long. I got a year with them, and I hardly get anything in their brain. Give me about 20 minutes, I can help you study. If you don't know how to study, there are people throughout this room that I'm sure would help you study as well, okay, and learn to study, because it is a learned skill. So elders, if you ever want me to teach a learn to study class, I'd love to do that. That'd be a great study, I think. What else does it mean? What? Somebody said train, I thought. Pray. There you go. Pray. Definitely. Ask for the help. Ask for it.
Sean, you've already left the thought. But you talked about a yoke of oxen. If you work with animals, they have personalities just like we do. If you get two similar animals with similar personalities, you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And that's even, and that is a past thought. You said I left it, but even with this one, that works. If you're going to find somebody to help you gird up your mind, find someone with a very similar personality to you and work with that person, okay? Sometimes it is good to work with a conflicting personality because you want that challenge. You want that push. I'll be honest, Travis and I agree on a lot of stuff. And so if we start talking and we think we have so many good ideas, eventually one of us will be like, we should ask so-and-so about this. Because we need somebody to pick that apart. And remember back to the personalities class, Aaron and I are exact opposites on that chart, right? And I think that makes great because I'll be like, hey, let's do this and this and this and this. And she's like, hey, remember we have this too. And this part will not work because this. And now that's a good idea, but. And we need that grounding factor and force, right? But if you get somebody that has a similar personality in the beginning phases, it's really, really great. As long as you don't get into groupthink where you're like, ooh, we're all thinking this. It must be a great idea, right? So if everybody's thinking something in a group this big, we should probably question it just a little bit to make sure that it's not just all of us agreeing that we're all super smart, right? So I had a poster in my classroom once. It's the demotivational posters, right? It says teamwork. It says meetings. That's what it said. And it's got a handshake on it. And it says none of us is as dumb as all of us, right? So as you get in a group, turn pretty dumb pretty quick, but you got to think about it. So you got to make sure you process that. So any questions about this one? Prepare your minds. Oh, who's got it? Where was it? Didn't see a hand. Who was? Oh, what? Did you have another one?
Well, oh, go ahead. Thinking about, you said you and Aaron are opposites on some things, but if you're really zealous with zeal, you can come together because you can bounce it off of each other and you come to a common goal.
Yeah, and that comes back to also our motivation. Remember, what was our main motivation? If we want to be zealous and stir things up and get people excited about stuff, what should our motivation be? What should our motivation be? Starts with an L. There's the L. Love, right? Okay, and know that. You know what? I may challenge Clint in his thinking, but I'm doing it because out of love, because I want all of us to be better, right? And Clint may challenge Ryan, but he's not doing it just to be a jerk about it. He's doing it because he wants everything to be better, right? And I think that's something we need to come back to, is that motivation of love. Anything else before I can leave the prepare your minds? Or gird up your minds. Here's another challenge for you. Instead of using the word prepare this week, use gird. Gird your dinner. It doesn't sound great. Yeah, and we're going to step at the very end, we're going to bring that up. Excellent point. So keep sober in spirit. What's that mean? Oops, sort of gave the answer. If you read that, ignore it. What do you think before you read that? What does it mean to keep sober in spirit?
Keep foolishness out of it.
Okay, keep foolishness out of it. I agree. I completely agree that it's to keep foolishness out of it. Does that mean we're supposed to be this way the whole time and never have any fun? I always think back to the pictures of all the pilgrims and the Quakers that you see, and they're all just so, part of it is that they had to sit still for the pictures forever, so they have to look that way, but they just don't look like they're any fun, right? And I totally get why that group died out a long time ago. So as you remember this, I think it is keep foolishness out of it, but there's something else. Keep focus on heaven, but remember we have here things here to do as we have things to do here too. Sorry, that's a really weird wording. I should have read that again. We have things to do here. Can you focus on heaven too much? Yeah. I think, and Steve and I have had this conversation before, where heaven can be such a goal. It can be such that big, shining, yes, Lord? Sorry. Okay. Yeah, Simon the Zealot's a good example, where he was very zealous, but he tempered it back, right? Stephen's got his hand up. There we go.
That comment just reminded me of an expression that I think of pretty often, which is we can be so heavenly minded that we're no earthly good.
Yeah, that is an excellent way to say it, that we are so focused to that end goal that we forget that we have things we're supposed to do here, right? That we are to love and to serve and to do and never tire of doing what? Good works, right? And it can be really hard to focus on good works. Now, I'm not telling you we shouldn't ever worry about heaven and the end goal. No, but I'm telling you that if you're so focused on that you aren't present in the moment and you aren't doing good where you can and serving, that you might have a hard time getting to that goal, right? Because you're missing the point. You're, what's the old saying, putting the cart before the horse, right? I used that in class one day and I had to draw an example of why that didn't work, right? Horses don't push, they pull.
John, there's an old saying that most people in here have heard, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Okay, yeah, and I would agree too. Yeah, you can be so focused that you get so sober in spirit that you are just, right, dry toast. You can't talk to anybody. You can't win souls because you're so rigid that you're turning people away. And I've seen it. We've all seen it happen, right? Somebody so rigid, so hidebound, so inflexible in their teaching or their talking or how they address people that while they are doing the good work of trying to win souls, are they actually accomplishing anything? Yeah, and that can be just as bad. So 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12, he throws out there, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life and attend to your own business and work with your hands just as we instructed you, so that you will behave properly towards outsiders and not be in any need. Okay? What's this got to do with keeping sober in spirit? It took me a little bit to think about it, but what do you think? Oh, earthful.
1 Corinthians, the 6th chapter, they're being chastised. But at the end of that, he says, know you not that your body is the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit? We need to always be keenly aware that our bodies are the totality, are dwelling places of the Holy Spirit, and we need to act like it, think like it, and keep in line.
Correct, yeah. And that reminder is important, that we are the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit, and it really helps us sort of focus on that. Being sober in spirit, in mind. So what's he telling them here? You got a little second to think about it. Anybody? See, so this is one of those like teacher tricks where I came to my conclusion, but I'm not 100% sure I'm 100% right. And so I'm wanting to hear what somebody else says before I sort of like throw my idea out there. And then I might just piggyback on yours. Yeah, what they said. Anybody? Why would he be telling the Thessalonians to lead a quiet life, attend to your business, work with your hands? Part of being sober in spirit is being humble, is knowing that you may or may not have all the answers. And guess what? Does everybody always want to hear from you? No. And being sober in spirit is admitting to the fact that you're not going to always be able to reach somebody. And that going out and throwing an absolute fit about something may be your right as a person. It may serve your goal as a person, but is it the sober and proper way to do things? is it possible to say the right thing in the wrong way? Remember, we talked about that with wisdom. It's perfectly total. Yeah, so if I know, Dave's nodding, so he's going to get picked on for a second. If I know Dave has an issue, and I go to Dave, and I'm like, Dave, I can't believe that you're doing this. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard seen in my life. I've seen bags of hammers that have more uses than what that's doing for you. What is wrong with you? Now, did I say the right thing? Yeah, because what Dave's doing is stupid. I don't know what you're doing. I don't have time to make it up. What Dave's doing is really stupid and really dumb, and it could tear his family apart, and it could cause him to have issues. It could cause the church issues. But was it the right way? I heard this a lot growing up. My parents would say, I didn't say anything. It's not what you said. It's how you said it. Some of you younger people probably need to say that louder because you've heard it more recently than some of us. But if I go to Dave and I'm like, Dave, I see you struggling, man. What can I do to help? Which one was more effective? Right? We talked about it before. We reach out to sinners. We reach out to people in the world. And sometimes that outreach is, look how stupid they are. They're dumb. They're doing this. They're doing this. They're doing this. I can't believe this person would do this. You're so evil because you did X, Y, Z. Hey, why don't you come study the gospel with me? How many times has that ever worked? Just about never, right? Now, we have examples of Christ. Christ stands up and he says, look, what you're right. You said correctly, you don't have one husband, and the man you're married to now isn't, right? But it was kind. It was compassionate. He said, he talked to her about it. He didn't say, go away, you nasty. You got all these different people, right? That's how we treat people, and I think that's important to think about in being sober in spirit. Got a hand over here. Yeah, go ahead. And I believe, and that is something that I think modern Church of Christ, we could really think about is switching from that adversarial mindset to that advocate mindset. Do we disagree with what they're doing? Yes. But what is more important? They're a soul, right? And we should advocate for them, and we will win more people by advocating for them, and then a little bit down the line saying, hey, here's some issues we should probably talk about before we get very far, and you'll get way farther with people. Now, will you lose them when you start bringing up those issues? You may, but you've got a whole lot better chance when you are loving and an advocate for them versus telling them how bad they are. So,
Sean, you can take someone gently by the hand and lead them. But you set your hand in the middle of their back and push them, it don't work.
Yeah, I've got a shirt that I wear to school sometimes. It says, I can explain it to you, but I can't understand it for you. So that's sort of where we are with this. And the whole, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. You can lead a person to knowledge, but you can't make him think. Same vein. Okay, so fix on the grace. I almost changed this to fixate, but he put it as fix, so I left it there. So fix on the grace. 2 Corinthians 7:11. See that what this godly sorrow has produced in you. We used this last week, remember? What earnestness, what eagerness to clear yourselves, what indignation, what alarm, what longing. What concern, what readiness to see justice done. At every point, you have proved yourselves to be innocent in this matter. Okay? So what's he saying? What is the author of 2 Corinthians telling these people to do? He's like, look, it's good that you've looked back. It is good that you are sorrowful for the way that you were. And it created what? Longing, alarm, concern, readiness to see justice done. And it creates that in them, right? But beyond that, we have to focus on the fact that we have what? From God. Grace. None of us, without that grace, would make it to heaven. We will never live perfect lives. We cannot. Right? Anybody perfect so far? Besides Harper and little baby here, I can't remember his name. Anybody else perfect in here? No, none of us are. We all mess up. We all do things that are stupid. We all make bad choices. That's something I tell my kids at school. I'm like, you all are about four. I teach eighth graders, right? I said, you all are 4 years away from big boy jail, right? And some of you, if you do something really stupid, you're only about 2 years away from it because you can get tried as an adult. And it's sort of a wake-up call to them because they don't realize that I can make some really bad choices. I had a teacher in high school who said, you're one bad, who was my college professor that taught social studies methods class. He said, everybody in this room is one bad decision from being on the front page of the news. That is something to think about, right? So, but what is that's scary, right? But what's the good news that we have? It's the G word, grace. Because we don't deserve it. That's what makes it grace, right? What's the preacher definition of grace that you always hear? Unmerited favor. You didn't do anything to earn it, you just got it, right? It's sort of like inalienable rights. You have your rights because they're yours. You have this grace. Why? Why do we have the grace? God gave it to us, right? Correct. Grace and mercy. Yeah. So that's what I want you to remember as we leave, guys. This is going to be sort of the last point, I think. Oh, no, 1 Peter 1:13. We're going to throw that back up there. That as we leave this book, if you take nothing else out of it about zeal, about being better, to remember to prepare your minds, keep sober in spirit, both ways. Don't go too foolish with it, but don't get so wrapped up in it that you're forgetting that we are people and we are dealing with people. We are dealing with flawed people. James said it really well. He said the church is not, it's not a club for the saved, it's a hospital for the sick or something. Yeah, it's not a social club for the spiritual elite. It's a hospital for the ill and the injured. And I think that's a big deal. But at the same time, focus on the grace of Christ. The grace that we're given. And that will help you sort of overcome some of the stuff. So, it was a lot in 45 minutes. Anybody got anything they want to say before we close out? Because I do have one last thing I'd like you to do. Remember, setting a reminder for a year from now to look at this. And while you have your phones out, I believe in feedback, and so what I'd like you to do in the last minute we have, please scan this. It will take you to a Google form. That Google form will have your email on it, but it's just telling you that it is not collecting your email, which is sort of annoying because it's there. I would like feedback, and LR are going to, I didn't tell them I was doing this, but LR and I are going to look at this and see what we can do. I want to be a better teacher, and I want to be able to serve you guys better. So if you would, scan this. Take the survey. You do not have to put your name on it. It is anonymous because I think surveys that aren't anonymous aren't very truthful. But I'd like you to fill this out. Give me some feedback, and we'll leave this up for a little while in case you don't get to scan it. But we've really appreciated your attention and your time, and would love for you guys to give us some feedback and see what we can do. And a quick plug, the books for Travis's and Jim's class are on the back table. He will be out there signing them for a dollar donation. I'm just joking. It'd be at least $3. But you have to pay in a $2 bill and a $1 coin. So anybody got anything else before we get on out of here? Yeah, we'll leave that up for a while. Feel free. Leave it out. If you want to put your name in the comment section, if you want to ask me a question and say, hey, come talk to me about this, I'd love to do it. Otherwise, thanks a lot, guys. And I think that was that the bill? And yeah. Yeah, that's fine. And if you'd like to give me feedback and you don't have a phone, just totally come talk to me, come talk to LR, write us a letter, send up smoke signals, however you'd like to do that. but there's good things about them, too. They let us do a lot of good stuff, like take feedback this way. So thanks a lot, guys. That's our class. We appreciate your time and attention. Set your reminder, write your five things, come talk to us if you want.